Proceed to hear our last case on the docket, number 11-4090, United States versus Eleanor Dimash. Mr. Nettles, are you ready? Thank you.
May it please the court. This case presents a very narrow issue. It's whether or not on the facts, the uncontroverted facts, the almost stipulated facts contained in the record, whether or not the physical restraint enhancement in the robbery guideline applies. And we take
it's strictly a question of law.
I think it is a question of law,
but
Your Honor.
The defendant doesn't challenge the facts.
No, sir.
He just simply says the facts don't justify the enhancement.
That's correct. In the district court, the pre-sentence report set forth the facts to which we both agreed and argued the enhancement based on those facts. And they're set forth in the record.
Very narrow question you have here.
It is a very...
Gun restrains them. And I want to make sure you go right to the heart of that because I need to hear some convincing on that one.
But, well, first of all, I guess as a general matter, a handgun restrains.
Okay, but we're talking physical restraint.
Exactly, and that's the point. And the point here in this case is there was no physical restraint.
Why isn't ordering somebody to get down on the floor is essentially a seizure of the person, a physical restraint? I can see if you just pointed the gun at the teller and said, you know, put the money in the bag, you'd have a robbery without physical restraint. But how about the act of telling somebody they have to get down on the floor? They have to move, essentially, not walk, but move to get down on the floor. Why isn't that a physical restraint?
Well, you first have to go back to the examples that are in the guidelines, such as being tied, bound, or locked up. And I realize that those examples are merely illustrative and they're not limiting, and I'm not suggesting that they are. But
you're familiar with our case in the United States versus Wilson?
I am familiar with that case, Judge.
There was no tying up there.
No, I think that case can be distinguished, though. In that particular case, there was a carjacking, and the perpetrators pointed a gun at the head of the victim. As Judge Goodwin said in his opinion in Lilly, that the victim in that case was confined in a small space. The gun was pointed to her head. She was controlled for as long as it took for the robbers to gain her car and to gain her money, which is, to me, goes sort of back to this sustained focus test that the Ninth Circuit has adopted in the Parker case and that Judge Goodwin expounded upon in Lilly. There was a sustained focus on her until they could get control of her car and take her money, which was over and above what they needed to do for the carjacking offense. So that's how I would distinguish the Wilson case.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but in this case, the use of the gun facilitated the robbery. It probably wouldn't have been able to complete the robbery without the use of the gun. And then that prevented the tellers from perhaps sounding the alarm or stepping on the alarm. And then when he instructed them to get on the floor and count to 100, which words to the effect, if you don't, you know what'll happen or something like that, that facilitated their escape, both of which are mentioned in the particular guideline.
That's correct, Judge. But if you look at the cases that have come up, the repeated cases that have been decided about this issue, there's been some very broad language about the application of this guideline, and I'm not trying to say that there has not been, but the genesis of that broad language generally has to do with some sort of physical act.
I know the D.C. Circuit and the Second Circuit agrees with you.
Agrees with?
Yeah.
With me?
Yes.
Finally.
I don't know if it's a compliment or not. it would be to you, but I'm talking about the other circuits.
Right,
but the First Circuit and the Tenth Circuit don't agree with the position advocated by the defendant.
Well, I can certainly explain the Tenth Circuit's decisions. The Tenth Circuit, they decided two cases, I think, which are the genesis of their particular rule. Those are the Fisher and the Roberts case. And in the Fisher case, the security guard was actually hit over the head with a stolen gun. which I think distinguishes it from this particular case. And in the Roberts case, the person was held at knife point at an ATM long enough for them, for the victim to withdraw money from that machine.
So, how is that distinguishable from this case? They were held at gunpoint long enough for them to get the money.
Well, I understand that, but they're actually being physically held at knife point, whereas they're pointing in bank robbery cases, in the ordinary bank robbery case, where someone uses a gun, they're going to get an enhancement for use of a gun if they don't get the 924C punishment that goes along with it. And as the cases point out, as the Anglin case points out and the Lilly case points out and some of the other cases point out, that a gun restrains, and a gun is going to restrain you from doing other things. Judge Posner, just in a Seventh Circuit case that was decided in 2010, basically makes the point that when someone points the gun and tells the teller to hand me your money, you know, the teller feels restrained to give him the money before saying, you know, well, can I go out and smoke before I do that? I mean, there's just some restraint inherent in the use of a gun, and any time someone comes in with a gun and orders someone to do something with a gun, you can say they're being physically restrained. But in order for the enhancement to be applied according to the examples, which other courts have said provide a meaningful signpost as to what the sentencing commission meant, because we don't know what the sentencing commission took into account when they made the base offense level and with the added gun enhancement.
Okay, but let me ask you, and I don't mean to cut you off, but it seems to me that you were referring us to Judge Posner's description in the Taylor case.
That's correct.
And he talks about movement of a person, movement to an unlocked room, movement from part of one scene of the robbery to another. The person's freedom of movement is restrained as effectively as by shoving or dragging him, was the way he described that. Well, in this case, are you saying that it's dispositive that they weren't required to move a certain number of yards across the room or weren't required to move into another room, but were simply required to go down on the floor?
I do think that that is a dispositive factor. And if you looked at the Parker case and the Anglin case and the Lilly case, they're on all fours with that. In none of those cases was the enhancement applied.
What's the rationale for the distinction?
Well, in the Taylor case,
it seems to me that, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the rationale, although unexpressed in a lot of these cases, seems to be that there's really another crime being committed. You see what I'm saying? There's more conduct. There's an abduction. There's something else going on. There's an assault beyond that which is necessary to complete a robbery. It's like robbery plus, it seems to me, if you try to synthesize these cases and put them all together.
And so which sort of goes, I think, to
why do we have a robbery plus here?
No,
because you don't need to put people down on the floor in order to accomplish a robbery.
No, you don't. If you have a gun, you don't. I would grant the court that. But in the published decisions that have addressed this, and Judge, what Judge Posner was getting at, I think, in his Taylor discussion, was he was interpreting other Seventh Circuit cases that have held the physical restraint enhancement appropriate when someone was forced to go to another location in a bank or go to another room. And so that's what he was
right,
talking
about. Right, but what's the difference between requiring somebody to go into a room that is 20 feet away and at gunpoint and putting them down on the floor at gunpoint?
I guess
legally, what's the difference?
I guess it goes to the locked up example, that they are being confined in an area. That's how I would respond to that.
See, I'm just, and I think your argument is so interesting, but I'm having a little bit of trouble finding out what is legally distinctive about being ordered to move 20 feet into an unlocked room and being told to get down on the floor at gunpoint.
Well, I think it just goes to the language of the enhancement and what the sentencing commission meant by that. There may be no practical distinction between it, but since there is this enhancement, we have to follow at least...
You're saying their guidance that there's a distinction.
There is. That's correct, Your Honor.
Mr. Nettles, this got nothing to do with this case, but you know that the sentencing guidelines were formulated by prosecutors for the benefit of prosecutors.
You know, in this case, as I said, there was no touching. There was no physical contact at all. The people were ordered to the ground, and they were there for only momentarily for as long as it took the robbery to take place, which did not take long at all.
Well, I'm trying to therein, I want to make sure that I'm with you in terms of understanding your point. As I understood it, when you look at the Wilson case, the Litter case, no touching there either. I mean, all that. So the touching is not the big deal. With Judge Keenan's question, you hone in on this space limitation, the car, things of that nature. And I'm still kind of letting that go around. And Lily brought up this business about, well, it was only for a brief moment. But in Wilson, it was for a brief period of time, too. So I don't see that as being a true distinction, the temporalness of it in terms of whether or not it was quick or not. But the question, the thing that I'm trying to focus on is it seems like your argument is narrowing in on, well, it's got to be a closed space that basically they're locked in somewhere. And it seems to me it doesn't matter where you are. If you got a gun, you're not going to move. And that's the restraint. You could have, you can put them out in the open or you can put them in a box. The act is restraint, whether you're restrained, and maybe the point you're making is restrained within an area. Whereas I don't know what. Maybe you can get me there.
Well, I'll try. A firearm restrains. And the point I was trying to make is there are, as Judge Posner says in the Taylor case, that the distinctions in the physical restraint enhancement are so fine that maybe district courts just thought a sentence without it. I mean, he actually makes that observation. But what I'm trying to say is that if you take all the reported decisions and you take the facts that were pertinent to the court's determination that there was physical restraint, I'm trying to assimilate all those into facts that are not present in this particular case. There are many cases, and the cases are almost in every circuit, where a person is taken from one area, an office, to a teller station, or from teller station to a vault, that have applied the enhancement. I mean, that's just one of the things. That did not occur in this case, and that was the only point I was trying to make. And then you have the sustained focus cases, and the point about being held momentarily is that the sustained focus does not apply because this was very brief also. And
let me ask you this. Suppose the defendant, there were three tellers involved, I believe.
Yes, sir.
All right, suppose the defendant had said to one of the tellers, you sit down in that chair, pointed the gun at her, and you stay there. And then he told the other teller to put the money in the bag. Would the one that he pointed a gun at and said, sit down in that chair, would that be restrained under your...
No, sir, I think that would be the same analysis. There has to be, if you don't have some sort of physical aspect to it...
Well, sitting in the chair or lying on the floor, that has a physical aspect to it.
Well, it has a physical, but it's not the same as being tied, bound, or locked up, or something similar to that. One can always say, and I keep going back to this, is that is a gun is a commanding presence, and it restrains people to do what the gunman tells them to do, and it's this and.
Well, how about when the robbers were leaving the bank? They had the tellers lying on the floor and told them to stay there.
Right, and there have been other cases where that has occurred, and the courts have not applied the enhancement. Again, in the Anglin case, I think, or the Lilly case, the person told the victim that there's a kid across the street watching you, and we know where you live, and I know what your wife's name is. And they just have not gone that far with the enhancement. It's our position that not that this enhancement should be circumscribed in any way, but in this particular case, it just goes too far on the facts in this particular case, that the actual examples mean something, and the Supreme Court has, again, in a different set of circumstances, in the Begay case, you know, say, you know, these examples listed in the statute for the armed career criminal, you know, they mean something. And I think that these examples have to at least give some guidance.
How do you address the question as to whether or not it facilitated their escape when they told them to lie on the floor and count to 100 or something to that effect?
Well, you know, I think anything you can do can facilitate the escape. I just don't think it's physical restraint. I think you have to say whether or not it's physical restraint. If this court finds that it's physical restraint, it facilitates their escape. But you can, I can go in and pretend I have a bomb and say, now lie on the floor, and you know, and I could duct tape a toothpaste box and say, this is a bomb, now lie on the floor, or I'm going to set it off. You know, there's so many, that's why it's hard to make a hard and fast rule in this case, because there's so many different type of facts that come into play. And if you make a hard and fast rule, you won't be able to craft it towards the particular facts in a case. But I think in this case, these facts do not come within the enhancement. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Bethea?
Thank you, ma'am. The government believes that Judge Wooten correctly applied the enhancement in this case, and that's for a number of reasons. The leading case in the Fourth Circuit, of course, is the Wilson case. And as you noted by reading the extensive explanation that Judge Wooten gave on the record as to why he thought the enhancement applied in this case, that he had carefully considered those cases and a number of other cases from other circuits.
What about the distinction that the Wilson case draws between the first and the second carjacking?
Well,
because the Wilson, and I know it's dictum, but the Wilson case does refer to the first crime in which the gun was pointed at the victim and she was directed to get out of the car. Court says it involved no physical restraint.
Right. I read that, and I was a little puzzled by that.
What kind of guidance
did
we draw from that?
To some extent, that was dicta because the case was tried on the second carjacking,
right,
in the Wilson case.
My question to you is, what guidance do we draw from that?
From the Wilson case?
From that other example.
From the previous example. I took it as dicta and disregarded it, to be honest with you, and when I read it. And I had to read the case a couple of times, because I couldn't see a real distinction there, because, as you said, you use the gun to force them out of the car. The lady's there. She has to take long enough to get her baby and grab her baby and then get out of the car. So, I mean, she didn't get out of the car. It was her car, and he certainly used, I guess, the opposite of restraint. He expelled her from her own vehicle. But I think if you look at the holding in the case and you look at the carjacking that did count, which is the precedent in the Wilson case, when the two men initially stopped the car, it was voluntary. They just said, we need a ride. And the woman apparently allowed them into the car without any threats or force. And then sometime down the road, they pulled the gun, took her money, and made her get out of the car. And if under those facts, which is what Judge Wooten was being guided by, these facts where these bank robbers come in, they force this one teller onto the floor, and as that teller's getting down on the ground, they have no way of knowing if this bank robber's going to come and shoot him in the back of the head. Certainly that's restraint. And then he makes the other two get down on the floor. And as you asked Mr. Nettles, I don't think you can draw a distinction. Are you going to say, all right, if we make a move 10 feet, it counts, but 5 feet it doesn't, or no feet it doesn't, but 2 feet it does? Those kind of fine factual distinctions, I think, should be left to the district judge to decide. And as the legal test in the Wilson case was, if it's not an element of the offense and if it's not specifically incorporated in the base offense level and it's listed as a specific offense characteristic, it must be applied unless it's prohibited. And, you know, if you try to craft rules to such fine distinctions under these facts, then I don't think it's going to be workable.
Okay, well, in Wilson, in the second case, they actually made physical contact with the victim, did they not? And the gun was pointed at the victim's head.
I don't remember there being physical contact in the. I think Judge Hamilton wrote that opinion.
They placed the gun to the side of Lutz's head. I'm reading at. Let me see. I don't. page 4 of the printout. I'm not sure exactly. Oh, page 469.
Well,
Gilbert placed the gun to the side of Lutz's head.
I know if
Lutz
I was
the victim.
If I was in Miss Lutz's place, whether the gun was 2 inches from my skull or touched it, would not make a lot of difference.
That's not a distinction either.
If you look at some of the other cases, the facts that he had to go on. Mr. Nettles mentioned the Fisher case. In the Fisher case, I believe that's the one where the guard was struck with the gun, but he got a separate enhancement for that. He got a injury to the victim for that. It was in the case it occurred. They ruled that physical touching is not required for the enhancement to apply, and it occurs whenever the victim is specifically prevented at gunpoint from moving, as opposed to requiring them to move, and that it met the dictionary definition. I mean, we get to these minute points, but that's really what it comes down to is the guideline is written, you have to interpret it. The cases say physical restraint in the sense of tying somebody up or holding them is not required. So then what is the limit? Well, that's not what we're here to decide. You're not here to draw a line as for all cases. The question is, in this case, was that limit crossed? And we submit that it wasn't. In the Kirksley case in the Eighth Circuit, they said that physical restraint occurs when defendant creates circumstances allowing a victim no alternative but compliance. That's the test that they thought should apply. And in the other Fourth Circuit case, it's unpublished, but I'm sure the Featherstone case was mentioned by Judge Wooten. And in that, they pulled one victim into the lobby, and they controlled the movement of persons in the bank by brandishing handguns. But what the court said was the victims were physically restrained. So they didn't rely just on the one that was pulled into the lobby. The others, they just restrained them by brandishing handguns, and that would be customers as well. So I think, given the case law that Judge Wooten was required to rely on, and given the way that the cases have interpreted what this means, that he appropriately applied it in this case, because there's no way you can say that he did not restrain those tellers. And, they're on the floor for at least in the sense that it was done in the Wilson case.
What's
and the
difference between restraint and physical restraint, in your view?
What is the difference between, I don't know. I guess you could apply restraint in a certain set of circumstances to cause someone not to talk. But in some senses, that's physical. Or to refer, to restrain themselves from
I guess. Your position that every robbery?
No, I don't want to go there because
you're taking property from
I'm not
going to
make
by,
a slippery slope.
Excuse me, sir, don't talk over me. You've been doing that all through the argument. So are you saying that in a robbery, you have to take property from somebody by threat of force or violence, right?
Right.
Okay, so you're not saying that every robbery there's a physical restraint to the victim, are you?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, so give me an example of a robbery where there's not physical restraint in your view then.
Well, if you walk into a bank with a note and give it to a teller and say, put the money in the bag, please, and they do it, I don't know that would...
If you present a gun, point a gun, is it always a physical restraint in your view?
I think it's getting close. I think it's getting close because it would restrain me. It would physically restrain me to have a gun pointed at me. If there are no other questions, that's really about everything I had to say.
All right, sir. Thank you. Mr. Nettles, do you have a rebuttal?
Just briefly, Judge Neenan, I think you asked a good question. What's the difference between restraint and physical restraint? I mean, one might say that Judge Wooten was restrained to hold that this was physical restraint by the ruling in the Wilson case, but that's not physical restraint. There can be restraint, as other courts have pointed out, of a moral type or of different types. The key distinction in this particular case is physical, and we keep going back, and I keep going back, to the examples that are listed and to the cases that have decided this issue before. I think that there are, in cases where there has been physical restraint, found that they are on facts very different from this particular case, and I think the Wilson case is factually different than this particular case. So if there are no other questions.
All right, sir, thank you very much.